The Israel Report with Rolling Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Indeed, 508. Nikki is saying, as long as it's within our hearts, the Jewish soul sings. Our hope is not yet lost. I love that.
There's a song in there somewhere.
Hold on, Nikki. As long as within our hearts, the Jewish soul sings, our hope is not yet lost. I hope you wrote that, Nikki, because I think there really is. You've got a future. In fact, Sasha Starr, maybe we can put her on to Jay-Z songwriters, because she's going to be better than he is.
I have a feeling that when you hear the lyrics for that song, mm-hmm. you will stand at attention, and it will inspire an entire nation, regardless of where you are on the religious spectrum.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Nikki.
Right, that's a message from Nikki. We'd love to hear your thoughts. It doesn't need to be as positive as Nikki's. We want real. Not saying Nikki isn't, but we want to know what you are thinking. Specifically with regard to this issue. Now, Nikki just made us look stupid. That's from Hatikva.
That's what I said. Some people will stand at attention.
I thought she made that up. Nikki, just for the record, Nikki, I gave you the credit for that. In fact, I can't believe Hatikva took your line. Jeez, Nikki, I would talk to them about that, because now they're going singing it all over the place and no one's giving you credit. India's Modi is in Israel today on a historical first visit. That's incredible, really.
Well, namaste, Prime Minister Modi. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. he missed World Yoga Day, which he is a huge fan mm-hmm. of. And if you were at Rabin Square about 2 weeks ago, you could have done your downward dog and gotten your Bikram on, because it's so hot that it was like doing Bikram yoga. Mm-hmm. And celebrated World Yoga Day, which, I mean, while we're talking about relations between Israel and India, is a huge initiative by the ambassador of India to Israel. But a huge namaste and welcome and shalom to Prime Minister Modi. This is a historical moment, because this is the first time a sitting Prime Minister of India has visited the Jewish state. And it's actually quite funny, because the posters and the, mm-hmm. and the pamphlets material that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs put out was Modi in Israel. So it was like Modi in Israel, and here we have this new poster leader for our city. I don't think our mayor would have been impressed, but we would make an exception for the Prime Minister. But yes, tremendous relations between Israel and India.
And this has been developing over the last couple of years. We've seen it in the press, Israel and India cooperating on many, many levels.
And, you know, yesterday we had the guys in who were talking cyber, mm-hmm. massive cooperation between the two countries, both from a prevention of crime and a prevention of terror. India suffers with a lot of the same terror threats that Israel does.
Right.
So a lot of cooperation there, sharing of intelligence, sharing of technology, a lot of military cooperation. It's really not unusual to see the two countries practicing drills of various kinds together, bilateral relations as far as trade in a whole assortment of areas. And also, India is also renowned for its high tech. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that Israel is moving out of the startup nation phase into the technology innovator stage. I think we're now starting to like really evolve. Run with that. And we're looking to new markets, and India is
a massive market.
Not even an emerging market, it's a massive market for Israeli technology.
Now, I read that Modi is a very big hugger.
I would imagine that, you know, the Indian people are amongst the most warm and hospitable and caring nations. And there's also a lot of historical love between Jews and Hindus.
Absolutely. In fact, there were a couple of articles about how when he met President Trump, how he hugged him. And so he's a very, very big hugger. First, Trump was very uncomfortable, but he got into it, which was a very, very nice indeed. Labour primaries, Herzog versus Peretz versus Gabay from Kulanu.
Well, tonight's the big night for Miflaga Avoda, or the Labour Party in Israel, as they go to their primaries. Mm-hmm. We, of course, know that Britney Spears had a hand or a performance in bumping them off, so they've been suffering with a few Labour pains. We also know that Isaac Herzog, the current leader of the Labour Party, is also the leader of Israel's opposition in the Knesset. And it's going to be an interesting one. You know, Amir Peretz, I don't know how popular he is amongst his Labour constituency, but has gained a lot of popularity over the years for his lobbying to get the Iron Dome financed and made. And of course, we've seen over the last number of years the success of the Iron Dome missile defense system. So Peretz very much in the consciousness as the guy who bought us Iron Dome. How he is with economy and local politics, we'll see tonight. And Gabar, who came from the Kulanu party. Kulanu was more of a centrist party started by Moshe Kahlon, former Likudnik, mostly to deal with the financial issues or the economy. That was his platform he ran on. He had a star on his list in the form of Michael Oren. So this is going to be a very, very interesting primary. What is also fascinating is Shelly Yachimovich, who was the main rival to Isaac Herzog, doesn't seem to be much of a player in these primaries. But with world trends being the way they are everything being unpredictable, who can predict?
Is there a sense that who will take the leadership?
There is a sense that perhaps Peretz could dench Herzog out.
Has Herzog been successful at all in this position?
The last elections, I think he was quite successful. The problem with Herzog for most of the Israeli electorate is he's not strong enough. He doesn't come across as powerful or strong enough.
I certainly don't get that feeling from him. He's not somebody you'd follow into battle, certainly.
No, he's very good.
Not that I really would follow anyone into battle, but that's a completely different conversation.
He's very good at writing strongly worded letters to Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, we've had Obama.
But he's not he's bougie. And that's exactly why he has his nickname
Bougie.
He's got
a very high-pitched voice, which just doesn't serve him. Unsigned, saying, I was amazed to find out that there are 80,000 Indian expats living in Israel.
And they bought Israel the mango. So thank you.
Yeah, wow.
The story of Indian Jewry is amongst the most fascinating that you will hear. In fact, I have to organization drop here. We have a federation in India, WITSO India Federation, and its president, Yael Girard, is an authority on Indian Jewry. The story is fascinating.
It is fascinating. In fact, my brother-in-law is a Kuchini Jew. And he comes from a very, very traditional Kuchini family from Cochin. And it's an absolutely fascinating, fascinating history because they had to be a very self-sufficient as a Jewish community. Absolutely fascinating.
I really would urge that if you have an interest in Jewish communities, that you research that. And they also have brought a lot of cricket into Israel.
Which is nothing wrong with that. Unsigned is asking, what does Rolene think of Naftali Bennett?
That's a very interesting question. Ah, Naftali Bennett. He's a very, very good orator. He's a little bit too right for me. That's my own personal position. He's a little too bordering on the extreme for me. I think that he's done phenomenal things as the education minister in fighting for a lot of programs, a lot of increases of Zionist education, which is important. He's also, fascinatingly enough, he's also working very hard with Natan Sharansky of the Jewish Agency and Ayelet Shaked, who's the Justice Minister, who does come from his Habayat HaYehudi party, to find a solution for the conversion bill, which has been pushed through. So I'm going to put myself out there. I'm not part of the Naftali Bennett electorate, but I do think that he has a very important role in Israeli politics.
Yet somehow he's never really been particularly successful when it's come to the polls.
I think he has a very specific constituency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, while we have Bougie, who is, you know, very... high pitched, you know.
Nebbish.
There we go. Nebba.
The word. The Jewish word that for
Dick.
Meek.
Mm. Yeah. We have Naftali
Bennett.
And
we don't believe they'll inherit the earth, by the way. I'm just saying.
We have Naftali Bennett, who most of the electorate see as abrasive.
Mm. Ah, okay. So he's really a polar opposite, very much so.
Who does have appeal when it comes to speaking, and whenever the next elections are, whenever they may be, his performance is going to be interesting, is Yesh Atid's Yair Lapid.
That's interesting. And he's, of course, he's connected with David Lipman as well.
Yes, David Lipman is a Chaver Knesset, an MK with...
He's a rabbi.
Well, he was, yes. Yeah. And David Lipman, to me, is a fascinating...
I also think so. Interestingly enough, I want to keep wondering if he's got a future on his own. I suspect not, which is why he's combined forces. But it's interesting. He's an interesting personality.
He's so... You know, I was watching last week a debate around the conversion issue. And one of the issues that he raised... which really stopped me in my tracks. He said, we have to sort this out.
Can I stop you for one second?
Sure.
For anybody who is not living and breathing Israeli politics.
There are people who do that.
I've heard stories. I have heard stories. You've referred a few times to the conversion issue. What is the conversion issue in Israel?
Well, the status quo as it stands right now today is that the rabbinate have a say over whose conversion is kosher enough. And this is going to be taken to the High Court, because many are of the belief that the High Court should have the final say. And this is where Naftali Bennett is coming in, because and somebody like David Lipman, who is a rabbi, who is Orthodox, who is Dati, he has said that if we do not recognize certain conversions, we will have lost tens of thousands of Jews to assimilation. And let me tell you, that stopped me in my tracks, because it wasn't the argument that one would expect from somebody who is Dati. But he is in Yesh Atid, which is a very centrist party. I think now more centrist right, because I think
so as well. I think they've moved. I think they were centrist left, and they've moved
now
centrist right.
Mm. Because I think Yair Lapid is a genius at understanding the psyche of the Israeli people, and he's tempering his
and he again also has an interesting background, his father being a left-wing anti-Semite. I'm sorry to say that, but I really do think his father was a Jew who didn't love Jews, I think.
And here we have Yair Lapid, who prior to forming Yesh Atid and actually performing in their very, very first election far better than even they expected to. I wrote a blog a couple of years ago around there called The Little Party That Could, because that was Yesh Atid. He doesn't have a political background. He's a journalist, which means that there's hope for people like me yet, Howard.
Right. Okay. So the conversion issue. So the conversion issue effectively is that the rabbinate at the moment has the say as to which conversions are recognized and which aren't.
Exactly.
And even if a conversion is done through strictly Orthodox process, they still might choose not to recognize it just somasur, or because of whatever reason that they choose. And this is causing an issue not only, the fringe issues are one thing, but where it might be a dubious or suspect conversion, but in fact, as you get closer to the essence of what Orthodoxy is all about, there are still multiple conversions not being recognized.
Well, this is why there is a move now. We've got the education minister Naftali Bennett, who is a Dati Jew. He is a Orthodox observant Jew, working very closely with Natan Sharansky, who's also observant, and Ayelet Shaked to sort this solution out. And all these might actually go to the Israeli High Court for final say, and they can overturn the decisions of the government. But meanwhile, the status quo as it stands is major political and psychological gains for the ultra-Orthodox.
And Sand is saying, where do all these leaders stand on Judaism and Jewish observance? I guess to varying degrees depending on who they are.
Yeah, I think, you know, also for a lot of people, where they stand spiritually is something that's very, very private to them. Some people we know where they stand because we know what the party stands for.
It's interesting, though. That said, one does wonder for a Jewish state if there should be a minimal level of Jewish observance required. I mean, I'm throwing that out there, and I'm going to sound it seems harsh. But the reality is, if you want to run as a representative for a Jewish state, should you comply with certain minimum levels of Jewish observance? It's an interesting question.
And I think that the way that the state is established kind of sets it up so that you don't have a choice but to observe a certain level.
Right. Can we just talk about UNESCO for a moment? There's a lot of discussion about Ma'arat HaMachpelah, which is the burial place for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, as well as some of the mothers in Hebron. UNESCO is voting on it, whether to include it as a Palestinian heritage site or not. Is that the situation?
That is the situation. The Israeli ambassador to UNESCO, as well as the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, are lobbying very, very hard that should this go to the vote, it's going to go to secret ballot. Because this, if it goes to secret ballot, it might take some of the pressure off some of the countries that vote in favor.
Right.
And we heard Sasha's talk about U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley. I mean, to me, the huge irony is that they don't see anything anti-Semitic about denying our rights to the to Jewish holy sites, to Jerusalem, to the Kotel, to the Temple Mount. But it's completely okay to accuse of being a racist when it comes to this issue. And they are pushing these resolutions forward using the most underhanded tactic possible, because they understand that they're not going to win on saying that Jews don't have a claim to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, or they call it the Ibrahimi Mosque. So they are saying that the site has been damaged and vandalized and that violence happens there. I mean, that is a holy site. That is looked after with the absolute reverence and sanctity it deserves. There is no vandalism that happens at Ma'arat HaMachpelah. The military presence around there is extremely substantial.
Absolutely.
So by using the most underhanded tactic possible, they're trying to bring this about.
Do you think they'll succeed?
I'm hoping they won't succeed. I'm hoping that with the push and last week's decision by the United States to withdraw its funding
support
of peacekeeping forces, and their threats that if this behavior continues, we're going to withdraw funding, and at the end of the day, for these non-governmental organizations or institutions, money talks. You want your
Absolutely.
Programs to happen? It's the money that talks that funds them. So it's going to be interesting. This is on the 7th of July, and we will be watching the voting process at UNESCO very, very carefully.
Time is 5:27. Unsigned saying, Rolene, if you run for office, you will have my vote.
Thank you, Unsigned.